I have a question about killing. Killing is defined as the intention to kill when there is a being to be killed and the death of that being. Is that right? And does that take place over a period of time? Or is it all referring to something that happens in the space of one cheetah?
Impossible, because there are many, many processes of cheetah. This akusala cheetah, when you want to kill, you have to think of that being that you want to kill and make the effort. So it's never one moment. Like in the case of Dana.
Yes, that's what I was worried about.
Yeah.
So in killing, if a person takes years to die, we haven't killed him yet. And conventionally that's true, but in ultimate reality there hasn't been that killing karma.
Think of the intention to kill.
Mm.
There was the intention.
There was the intention, yes.
Yeah.
But there also has to be the actual killing, the actual death of the person. I find it a bit hard to understand when we're talking about the person and that is only a concept anyway. So how can there be a death of a concept? Oh,
but we are thinking of the one who has that intention to kill.
Yes.
And he cannot know, maybe, that it takes years. It doesn't matter. That is the effect on the other person.
I think Ken's talking about the four or five requirements. So one of them is the person should die.
Yeah.
So if the death takes place at some later stage, he's saying the karma is not completed until that time.
It still is, but we don't worry. And no need to think of that. That's too much thinking.
In ultimate reality, there is an answer to that, isn't there? We don't know. By thinking about it, we don't know. But
but there is.
What I find strange is that the karma being completed, but karma is not there to be completed. It's fallen away, right? So what does it mean for the karma to be completed?
The karma of killing isn't completed till a person dies.
Well, but the intention has already fallen away.
Long ago.
Do you have any further comment on that?
To me, I think that can we understand everything? And I think that if there is no understanding about reality right now, it's only thinking, imagine what's what. But as long as there is no understanding reality right now that can understand whether this moment is kusala or akusala, it's just not knowing what is real at that moment, because one just keep on thinking about concept. But when there's the understanding of reality right now and reality appears as it is, then it is the very direct understanding, not just imagine whether citta now is arising and falling away, whether it will do such and such action, whether that karma is finished or not. See, because just thinking like that, I don't think that it can bring more understanding until one can attain enlightenment at all. And after that, no need. After becoming enlightened, no need to think whether the action is finished or completed or not. So I think that since the time is not long enough to think about other things, rather than understanding reality as it is, which is not easy to understand at all, even just a characteristic like visible object, it's not easy to have no idea about people and think anymore. It's only that which is seen, and after that there is thinking, rightly or wrongly, or just imagine that it's that or this. But by developing less attention to concept, one will see the value of beginning to understand reality right now, that thinking is just finished, no understanding of reality right now. See, by understanding the distinction between concept and reality, one can see that no matter one thing a whole day long, it's only not knowing reality, which sees or which thinks, which is kusala or akusala. And we try to have standard to say whether it's of this degree or that degree. But it's not real at all, because it has to be only panya which can really develop and understand to become detached from the story is so important, or the politics or anything is much more important than reality right now. Then we lose the time of understanding reality, because we learn a lot about citta, cetasika, and rupa, and the function or the continuation of citta arising and falling away from the moment of birth up to now. But it's not the direct understanding at all. It's only story about reality, like citta, cetasika, whether how wholesome it is or how unwholesome it is. But now, how wholesome or how unwholesome it is. We don't have to think in words, because when reality appears, no need to say anything. But there can be the better and better understanding, the characteristic of reality, so that there will be less attachment to what we think that is so important in one's life, but actually it's not at all. Anything arises and falls away all the time, unexpectedly. It's only just thinking or dreaming that it should be this way, or it is that way, or I'll do this way or that way. But it's not the understanding, which has to begin. Otherwise, it will be like this. Next life or other life, it must be like this. Just think after seeing. And thinking is just thinking. But what will happen must have its proper condition so it can arise right now. So to me, I don't think too much about whether there's that. So I cannot answer sometimes, because I am not interested in that point. And I know that no one can know everything about the degrees, about the karma.
Once there's satyayana, then you know what's relevant to know.
Because I think that such a point like this can continue on the whole life. Mm. Mm. No answer or something like that.
Mm. You want there to be only one citta. Why is that so important to you?
Because that's what I've been told all along, and I thought I was understanding it correctly, but just recently I realised I haven't quite been following properly after all. That's all.
Do you mean one citta at a time, or only one citta will
one
result in
a
an
time.
Act? One citta at a time. Yeah. Well, I don't think I think that's correct.
Well, yes, it is, but in some another way of understanding it, there can be dana can require several citas.
Not together at one time. It has to be one at a time,
yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
And kusala moment is kusala moment.
Yes.
How long that kind of citta keeps on arising and falling away, who knows, even right now. No one can count how many citas now.
Asavana, Pachya?
Asavana.
Asavana, repetition.
Repetition condition.
It's repetition of the same type of citta.
Mm.
Not identical, but the same type. In the jhavana process.
But that is not for anyone to know, but to understand the anattaness, the non-self of reality right now.
What is the implication of whether the kamma is completed in one jitta or requires several jittas to be completed? What's the implication of that?
Can there be dana right now? Or do we have to wait until some other cheetahs have taken place first?
Is it the fact that dana, for example, isn't then a single paramattha dhamma, that a dana requires several jittas to be completed, and several jittas is not a paramattha dhamma?
That was my problem, yes.
Yeah. And like the same with killing, taking life?
Well, yes.
What interests me is that, is there anything that conditioned your interest in killing?
I noticed that when I said the word killing before, a little mosquito went like that, and I instinctively went like that, and thought, oh, that's a bit of a coincidence, isn't it?
What citta is there at that very moment, if it happens now?
A kusala jhavana citta.
What kind?
Javana.
What type of akusala?
With dosa.
From?
Ignorance.
And ignorance, yeah.
This trying to know one citta can be artificial. And
all right. Well, this brings us back to a conversation with Tom in the bus, or at the restaurant. Do we need to know that there is rebirth? Or is it enough to know that there are just namas and rupas now?
I think if the reality of the moment is known, because we'll never know rebirth as such until you know arising and falling now.
Yes.
And I think if you know the realities of the moment, how it rises and falls and how this conditions this, mm-hmm. then the rebirth, like Patisanicitta, is known.
It is, but there's also the Patisanicitta.
Well, that is a rebirth consciousness, yeah.
So there's two types, isn't there? Yeah. And I'm thinking, don't we need to study the Dhanacitta as well in order to understand the cittas that are arising now?
But there is no Patisanicitta now, so it's impossible.
No, but it will fit into our theoretical knowledge of what cittas are.
Only if you know the present moment now, and then later on, at the moment of Vipassana Jnana, it can be understood that this citta now is arising and it is falling away. Mm. And then you also have more understanding about the rebirth consciousness.
All right. So why do we, almost doing Dharma study, why do we turn that page to the Patisanicitta? We don't just leave it until we have Vipassana Jnana,
actually,
do we?
The question you're asking, Ajahn, is why do we study the Abhidharma details about Patisanicitta, Chuticitta, about realities that can't possibly be known at this moment?
Yeah. To know the truth of reality right now. The truth of visible object that is seen. The truth of seeing. The truth of thinking. Otherwise, there is no understanding at all.
In terms of theoretical understanding, sort of memorizing it all out of a book and getting the intellectual roadmap can only get you so far. It seems to me that the considering with understanding is necessary there as well. It's the considering in little by little in the moment that will lead to Banya.
I think that some people would like to study and some wouldn't like to study at all, right? Mm-hmm. So there are many subjects to study. What would you like to study? But this is very, very beneficial subject to study, reality right now. Otherwise, you know the other people, but you don't know yourself at all. You can criticize the action or the deeds or the speech of the others. What about citta at that moment? See? And what is the best thing to know yourself or the others? Or you just want to know the others by speculation, not the direct understanding of whatever appears. If there is no subject at all about this, it's impossible for anyone to study. But when there is the teachings that can help the people who are interested to understand reality right now, it depends on each individual's accumulation, whether who would like to study, would like to know. But I think that if we study other subjects, it's only thinking, expecting, or speculation about terms and theory and thinking, but not the understanding of the truth of reality right now at all. Because the truth of life is birth and death, for sure. We don't know when, but before death, what happens? Ignorance, still don't know anything about how this moment is conditioned to arise, No one can do anything because there are conditions for each moment, each reality to arise. Just understanding it, because even right now, we can talk about seeing, but seeing is already arisen, not by anyone, but by conditions. When we talk about thinking, thinking is already arisen by accumulations. We don't have to do anything, or we cannot do anything. Just understanding reality as it is, that no one can control the arising of what which can experience, that which can think, that which can remember. And all these realities do not last at all. Where were they when they have gone, see? But the new one is conditioned and appear in succession unknowingly all the time. It's like the truth is hidden. If there is no understanding of reality right now, and we think that we know a lot of subjects, the worldly subject, the scientific subject, but what about now? I know, where is the I? I think, where is the think, or the I think? See? It just arise and then pass, gone. Nothing is left. You might think that you own this body from head to toe, but it's not true, because you just remember that you have eyes, teeth, lung, blood, but actually, no. Because reality is conditioned to arise and falls away in split seconds. This is the truth, that when panya is developed, the word like citta arises one at a time, and citta can experience one object at a time, and citta cannot stay, cannot last, it arises and it passes away instantly. This is so true. So at this moment of seeing, since the lung does not appear, the foot does not appear, anything does not appear, only visible object, the object of seeing, and seeing is now. And that's the proof of it has to be so true. When panya knows the reality as it is, no mixture of any other reality in a characteristic of a reality. For example, visible object, what can mix with that? Can there be water in it? Can there be a plate in it?
Seems like.
Yeah. That is ignorance. Ignorance. Yeah. That is ignorance. Otherwise, you can see, smell. You don't need the smell, a sense or smell base at all. You can hear sound at moment of seeing without having the sound base. And when everything arises by conditions and is completely gone, never come back, what is there? That can be you or your possession or your dear one or whatever you like.
Nothing new.
Mm-hmm. And that's so true. Be brave, courageous to understand reality, that actually the world is that which arises and falls away, and nothing is left at all. From moment to moment, it's gone completely.
You say, be brave, which is very true. But how to become brave? Because that is difficult.
Without understanding.
Because we attach too much to
one
person.
One clings to that which just appears for seeing to see. That's all. You cling to the sound which just is the object of hearing to hear, that's all. No more.
But so long as one has not realized this, it's very difficult to be brave.
Can there be more understanding?
Yes, little by little.
Mm-hmm. That's the way it grows.
When you talk about physical object, just physical object, and I said sound in the visible object, I can understand in theory that, well, more than just in theory, that what appears through the eye door is one thing, and what is experienced through the ear door is another thing completely. But still, it's possible to conceive of a person speaking and that person being experienced partly through the eye door and partly through the ear door. So there can still be the idea and obviously the wrong view of a person that is being experienced, but by two different doors.
How many moments of touching you have touched?
Countless.
See, so there are many moments which reality arise, appear, but there is no understanding.
Mm.
You just think about something so far apart, like you think of seeing and hearing, but there is the idea of someone or things as the seeing, see, but you don't know that all of this is gone, and then there is hearing. So it's quite not close enough to understand reality as it is. So how can there be the understanding of the arising and falling away of anyone? Because it's hidden. And you think about just seeing and hearing. You don't know what's in between.
So it's just thinking about seeing and hearing. No understanding.
And then last night I was listening to a tape that Sarah had given me of last September here at Kundun Dern's house, and you were teaching Dhamma. And I was listening in the dark, and you were talking about something different than now. Well, not really. Not really. But, I mean, intellectually I knew it was a different context, but I thought, what's the difference between listening, like what I was hearing, and now what is being heard? And it seemed like I didn't know what the difference was.
You mean the hearing and sound?
Well, it seemed that without, like, following on what you were saying, Jonathan, it's like when being here, it's putting, the tendency is to put everything together so that this is a different time to back then. But listening in the dark, it could have been any time, like, does it matter? Does that difference matter, that was a different time and place? Listening or hearing the sound it was like the sound of your voice and the teaching, say to today, does the difference matter?
Or sound?
It's still a story though, isn't it?
Why did you just ask who's hearing?
Whose voice?
Oh, yes. You
just said whose voice. Because he said it's my voice, yes. But actually, if that voice sound belong to me, or right. Whose voice, or just sound.
Yes. Just like now. Just hearing the sound just like now.
I suppose the question is around that area of if some of the sense doorways are not arising, or experience through some sense doorways do not arise, does that in any way change the experiencing of whatever is arising?
What Ajahn would be saying is that it's sound that has to be known, but what's really happening is it's just story going on through thinking, and there's no real awareness of sound. There's no real insight into sound. There's simply just a story going on while you're listening in the dark. Another thinking process, different to what's happening here.
I was struck by the sameness of it, in the sense that listening in the dark and listening here were actually the same.
Like hearing is hearing and sound is sound, and wherever and whenever they occur.
We were also talking a little bit because of something that Maeve was listening to on this recording about your response to
friends when they're sick or have some disability or when someone is very ill or when there is a death, and how your response is very different. And could you say a little bit more about what is most helpful to say? Because usually you stress, I think, in, like on this recording, about how the problem we see it when there's sickness or pain is the attachment to self, and really it's the clinging to and the unpleasant feeling that we find so important, or we think the concern for the other, but really it's to oneself at such times.
It depends on one's own understanding only, no matter what we are talking about.
Okay. Yesterday we spoke about metta and then just seeing visible object and thinking. And you said very useful things, but I found it rather difficult to get a fine point. So I'm wondering, would you say some more about that, about metta and the visible object? Because we can't have metta for visible object.
Do you have metta now?
Yes.
Exactly the same. After seeing, after knowing who's who. Mm-hmm.
But you were saying something about thinking and awareness of thinking. It's satipatthana.
Satipatthana can arise at any time of any object, because satipatthana is anatta. No expectation for satipatthana to be aware of a certain object at all.
And how condition satipatthana more metta for a person?
Right understanding.
And in which way?
The body.
So that's really hard for people to swallow.
Yeah.
How can you say something Kusala so that I can Kusala. Explain it to others, because it's so hard to accept?
Kusala is Kusala. Do you have to select which one you'd like to have right now?
Impossible.
So when there are conditions for any kind of Kusala to arise, it arises.
Yes. Because we are thinking of a person then, not of visible object.
Can you separate visible object from a being?
We have to.
Can you?
It's difficult for me.
We don't have any trouble thinking of a person.
No.
So even if we develop satipatthana, we still don't have any trouble thinking of a person.
In between.
Yeah, well, more than thinking of visible objects, more than experiencing visible objects.
You're saying when one develops satipatthana, one still thinks of persons and objects.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's what I, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even the enlightened being still thinks of persons and objects.
But we still think of them as persons and things.
As I understand it, with less wrong view.
Yes, which will condition less attachment, yes.
More understanding of what the characteristic of metta really is,
yes.
So that is a condition for metta to develop,
right.
By really understanding what it is and not confusing it with attachment so much, which is what we do mostly.
Right.
So the aim is not to think less about people and things.
Right. Oh, I realize that.
That less illusion that it is any person.
Yes, and metta, unless choosing where one thinks wrongly, that one might like to direct metta.
I like to hear about it more, because I feel that I don't get everything.
How does some arahants or some Buddha directly experience past cittas? They say the Buddha knows what happened in the past. He doesn't know it by inference, or he knows what happens in the future, not by inference, say, but by direct experience.
It's not just thinking about.
It's not just thinking about. So direct experience doesn't mean...
It has to be jhana, special jhana.
Yeah. So I think in English, when we think of direct experience, we have a slightly different idea than perhaps in the Pali. It's by special knowledge, but...
Yeah, it's just sure the difference between thinking
about it. Yeah, it's not... I see some people on DSG also who say confused that even satipatthana knows the object. It's just fallen away, right? but we call it direct experience.
As long as
they object to calling it direct experience, but in fact,
as long as there is a reality appearing, we don't mind whether it's past and it arises again or not.
Anyway, the direct experience is very different.
And in Tipitaka, the word nimitta is used to
knowing the nimitta.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to hear more about that direct experience and knowing the nimitta.
All realities arise and fall away in split seconds.
Yes.
So what appears now is the nimitta.
Mm-hmm. I think yesterday when we were having a bit of the discussion about visible object and the kalapas, you were saying don't be distracted from understanding visible object which appears now, but I think somehow in that discussion it made it clearer to me how it has to be the nimitta of visible object which appears now.
Because visible object has fallen away.
Because there's so many moments of seeing visible objects, so which visible object appears, actually it's an emitter, because it's not the precise understanding of one visible object that appears out of the kalapa of rupas. It has to be the emitter of visible object.
This would be for Satipatthana.
For Satipatthana, yes. Because only at higher stage of vipassana jnana can there be the really clear understanding of the reality, because of the understanding of the arising and falling away of a particular rupa that appears. So before that, it has to be the understanding of nimitta, because it's not just one rupa that appears.
Peter's question about the nimitta of visible object for someone who's beginning to develop satipatthana. How long does that nimitta last?
That is a satipatthana to think about how long.
Okay.
At that moment it's not satipatthana at all. It seems like one tries to know or to experience it, not the panya which develops.
We were talking this morning a bit about accumulations and tendencies and vipaka, and I realized when I was trying to articulate what I thought I understood that I really couldn't. So I'm wondering if you could talk again today a bit about our accumulated tendencies and the natural decisive support condition.
Everything is the decisive support. We cannot know which one condition this, because it can be anyone from the past, not just this life.
Well then, can you talk a bit about accumulations and how they're accumulated?
Citta arises differently. That's why there is the term accumulation. Otherwise, they must be just the same quality.
Mm-hmm.
So different accumulations, I mean, for example, anger accumulates in a different way to generosity, or a more wholesome accumulation?
One cannot know the accumulation until citta arises at different times. There must be accumulation for such conditions to condition that very moment.
Well, Ajahn, when you said jittas arise differently, did you mean different jittas arise?
Even lopa is
lopa
different.
Lopa and dosa are not the same.
Okay. At different moments.
And for different objects also.
So it's not a matter of accumulating differently in that sense, but different accumulations.
Do you like mango?
You bet.
Depending on accumulation.
Can we say then that accumulation just refers to the different citta? That's
from moment to moment.
From moment to moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But cittas are different by cetasikas, which accompany, by the object, and by other ingredients too. Like panya and without panya.
It's not that anything is actually carried over, or just that there are very different conditions that affect each citta. So each citta is different. That is what the accumulation is. What is it that accumulates in each citta?
You cannot touch citta.
Right.
But all namas arising together and fall away together and condition the next one.
Yeah.
Where are those experience and accumulation before?
Where are they?
Uh-huh.
They've fallen away.
But it conditions the next one.
It conditions the next one.
Mm-hmm. Not the other process or series of citta condition this one.
Are habits just another term for latent tendencies? Or a gross term for when we say we have this habit or that habit?
Let's talk about ignorance.
Mm.
Who does not have it? Last moment, is it gone? Or it's still now? More or less. See?
It's arisen again.
Do you mean that as soon as ignorance which arises with one citta has fallen away, there is no more ignorance? Because it's gone. Okay? No more. It's completely gone with that citta. No, it's not like that at all. Because one citta, each citta has the anantarapaccaya. As soon as it has fallen away, it conditions the next one. And what about the conditions like cetasika? It also conditions the next one, not only citta. That's why citta is different each moment from the previous one.
Did you say that each citta conditions the next one, and each cetasika conditions...
Also, citta and cetasikas.
Nama.
Yeah, yeah, the nama. That's why the understanding can grow and develop.
It's not these tendencies being or accumulations being carried, it's conditioning the arising of the next.
I like the simile of the mango seed. Within the mango seed is a potential mango tree. But where is the mango tree?
I guess I'm not clear on accumulations and latent tendencies. Is there a difference between them?
Do you think in terms of material?
No.
Accumulation? No. If you don't think in terms of material, it can be nama.
It's yes. Mental.
Oh, mm-hmm. I know it's mental.
You cannot touch.
Right. Right.
You cannot see, but it's there.
Could we say that each moment of jhana adds on to the experience? Just adds.
Mm-hmm.
And conditions the next and the next and the next.
It cannot be thrown away.
And each moment, jitta arises and falls away completely. And also conditions the next moment that arises and falls away completely.
Back.
The something, nothing, something, nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing, something.
Nothing, something.
I think it was you.
Is that the way it was? Nothing, something, nothing, something.
Nothing, something, nothing.
Yeah.
When is there nothing?
Yeah, I was going to say, what
when
is
there?
Before there is something.
The last moment of arahata.
So we're talking about the particular concepts that are marked as also being accumulated, as well as the citta.
As long as it's not the understanding of reality, it's only concept and words. In this life, I use Thai language. Next life, I don't know. So all the collection of words in Thai
can be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
But what you
like, we might be very skillful in Pali, but now who knows?
But what you were saying on this tape that I referred to was actually you were picking up a friend who wasn't very interested in learning Pali terms or the numbers of jitas or numbers of rupas and the details, and you were making a comment about how pariyatti is accumulated and how even though a lot of the terms and details and the Pali is forgotten at the end of the life, the fact of having studied means when one hears again, the understanding penetrates deeper in whatever language.
Because it's the understanding of reality. Otherwise, it's like we learn another language when we just remember like parrots.
So I think what you meant here was is the understanding of realities which has been developed by, first of all,
hearing and considering the details, because if one doesn't hear about the different rupas or the different kind of chetasikas, there cannot be any understanding developed.
If one doesn't know that this
moment is Dhamma, what's the use of talking about jitas and chetasika?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we could compare with people who listen to Dhamma in Thai and those of us who listen to English. We're using different language, but we're interested in the same thing.
Just in terms of accumulation, and I was going to ask you, Ajahn, I seem to have no accumulation to remember Pali terms, or very few. Much forgetting, and when they are used, it's like, what does that mean, etc. And yet, when you talk about visible object and when you use less Pali terms, I can follow what you mean. There's a level of understanding there. But partly that discussion, Sarah, about the study of Pali being useful, I wondered, is this lack of accumulation of this particular skill a hindrance to understanding, remember?
Many people who pass the Pali examination up to the grade 9, the highest one, no understanding about reality right now.
Does it inhibit understanding or make understanding more difficult not to remember the Pali?
Do you think that I know Pali?
Yes, I do.
No.
Well, I'm like Maeve. I have a bad memory for Pali words, and it doesn't come easy for me. But I find that if I contemplate on the reality of things, it makes a lot of sense to me and very clear. So we have different accumulations. We have to deal with that.
Yeah. I think perhaps for someone who really doesn't like to study the details, Ajahn says the details will help you if she thinks they'll help you. For someone who's obsessed with the details and want to be Pali scholars and so on, but
she'll
really don't study
yes.
the present moment,
right.
the advice would be almost the opposite.
Exactly, yes.
It's good to know Pali, it's good to know English, it's good to know any language, but it's better to understand reality, because those who understand Pali, they can misinterpret Pali, like the term Ariyasatta. They don't know that it's Dhamma and what is meant by Dukkha, but they can translate it. But they don't know the reality, which is Dukkha or Ariyasatta. The best thing is to understand reality. But if you can speak correctly and you know deeply about that word, it helps too. But if you don't understand it as it is, you just know how to translate and how to speak, that is useless. And they can bring the misunderstanding too. So the best thing is understand better and better, deeper and deeper about reality, that one heard, even one word, like Dhamma. Dhamma is anything which is real, and no one can control it. It's conditioned, so it arises. If it does not arise, how can it appear? So at this moment, whatever appears is conditioned and it has arisen already. No one can have anything arise at all. Impossible. By understanding this, what one understands is better than just thinking about the term Dhamma and how many meanings of it, but not knowing that this moment is Dhamma. And the more there is the understanding of Dhamma, it goes deeper and deeper to the anusaya that can be eliminated by better and better, deeper and deeper understanding. For example, even just Dhamma, uncontrollable. Do you want to do anything in order to support understanding? Because now there is no understanding. What else can support the understanding to arise? Impossible, because that is not the understanding of Dhamma as uncontrollable. No. There is still I who can do, or I who can control, or I who can sit, or I can find the support, or something like that. But when it's really understood, It's only developing, beginning to understand whatever appears by conditions, by the enough or efficient understanding of Dhamma, which can condition direct awareness. Because one doesn't have to look for any Dhamma at all. It's everywhere. When one is not fast asleep. So it depends on understanding.
You don't have to go anywhere to do to for the development of Satipatthana. That, as you say, is reality right now.
So each word is one can understand better, like the nama, the reality which arises and it has to experience. An object, it knows whatever appears now as it is. Do not have to think whether how many color or how many shape and form, just that which is seen.
Yesterday you made a comment about how when there are many pleasant results, many moments of kusala vipaka, this is what is referred to as rich. But you said not if there's always craving. But even if there's always craving, that doesn't affect the kusala vipaka. So I wondered what exactly you meant, because if rich refers to many moments of kusala vipaka, but not if there's always craving, how does that affect it?
When there's no conditions for craving to arise, can it arise?
No.
Even the object is very present.
Yes. But if what is meant by rich refers to the moments of kusala vipaka, what difference does it make whether there's craving or not craving? Could we not say someone is rich because there are many moments of kusala vipaka, and whether or not it's followed by kusala or kusala cheetahs, still the vipaka is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still rich, but...
Because it's the vipaka which experiences the pleasant object.
Yes. But your comment that when there's a lot of craving, it's not rich, but still the kusala vipaka is the same.
Yes, but can the craving bring pleasant result?
I see, okay. So we could say, well, rich for that time, but later won't be rich.
Very short time.
Very short time, okay.
I've got a, something for Ken again, relating to discussion Ken and I had about bombing and so on. Do you remember that discussion we had?
Yes.
And we didn't quite, I think we didn't quite agree whether the person who's going on a bombing raid, the airline, the pilot or whatever, or the bombardier, if he drops a bomb, is he doing killing or not?
Well, I think the answer was that if he's just doing as he was instructed by his superiors without any desire to kill, then it's not killing.
That wasn't my answer.
So what's your answer then?
So my answer was, assuming there were people underneath and he's pushing the button and dropping bombs, I'm saying that's definitely a kusala karma, even if he... he's just doing his duty.
You told me a story ages ago. There was a king executor.
Yeah.
And he used to it was only his orders, but he always used to kill. But he was so into Dharma. And then he thought that was real bad.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that he taught the Buddha, or I don't know.
Sariputta.
Talked to him and then he got enlightened. So how does that work?
Well, that story was Sariputta came to him and he gave him food, and then he said, "Oh, Sariputta, I feel very bad. I'm an executioner." And Sariputta knew he was getting upset about thinking about his past ill deeds. And Sariputta said, "Well, something to the effect of, did you want to kill or were you just doing your duty?"
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, I was just doing my duty." And Sariputta didn't sort of said, "Oh, well then."
That's all right. Okay.
Yeah, and he became Sotapanna. He lost the guilty feeling and could concentrate on Dharma and became a Sotapanna.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
On the one about the bombing, this actually first came up because of a quote actually of something that she had said with regard to dropping bombs, and how what was important was the intention and whether there was the intention of the person who dropped the bomb, whether it was the intention to kill or whether someone was just doing their duty without any intention to kill, and what happened to the people on the ground, whether they were killed or whether they were saved or whatever happened was a result of their own karma. People found this very objectionable. Is there anything else you can say?
Yes, but who knows? Jitta at that very moment, whether it's Kusala or Akusala, there's the point.
You can't tell just from looking at the situation.
But the bombardier has the intention to push the button to release the bomb.
Yeah, but that's not the same as killing.
He may be hoping that nobody's going to get killed.
Yeah, he might be
crying. Totally like that.
Yeah.
Just drop, please, no one dies.
We can distinguish between doing an act intentionally and knowing that death is bound to result from that, and doing the same act intending to kill people.
Okay, you're dropping bombs on a populated area, say. So we're not assuming it's just in the jungle. It's on a, you know, it's a populated area with people underneath.
Hiroshima, for instance.
But they knew that it's not right deeds at all to do that. But the result, who knows?
I can imagine someone really not wanting to do it and really praying.
Yeah.
It doesn't. The bomb doesn't go off. But at the moment of pushing the button, they still have that intention.
That intention is not the intention to kill.
Intention to follow orders.
But one can see that it's Akusala intention anyway. But not to the degree.
Oh, not to that degree.
Yeah. Because it would be Akusala intention. Just following orders.
Yes, I think so.
I think that's too far away. What about animal like ants or mosquito?
Yeah.
Akusala citta is Akusala citta. Killing is killing.
What is the story Nina tells when Arjuna and Nina were in Sri Lanka, I think, or there was a judge, which I thought was very good, and the judge sometimes had to condemn executed criminals. That was his duty. Once a murderer had been convicted, he must apply to say, oh, this is, you get the death penalty. And he asked Arjuna about it. And I think Arjuna said, did you want to do that? Or were you just following the procedure? And he said, well, I was just following the procedure. And the inference was that that's less Akusala than if he'd really wanted to kill them.
It's the judgment, it has to follow the law.
Right.
You cannot do other things. Yeah.
So I think that, does that answer your question, Alex?
Well,
according to some way that's explained, is that the question was a bit of a device to calm the mind of the listener, rather than a pronouncement of whether the deed was killing or not.
Yes, there was some degree of Akusala in pronouncing the death sentence, but it's much less than the person who's really happy to pronounce the death penalty. You know, he's just following the rule, is that correct?
Can a king like Bimbisara be Sotapanna? Could
King Bimbisara,
a king can be Sotapanna. In the old days, a king performed function like being a judge too.
And his laws prescribe execution in some for some things. So.
What about the law? Is the law and the judge is only the reading? What is written by law?
Declaring the law.
But is it still Akusala? Did you say that?
It depends for a king who's Sotapanna or anyone like a judge. If a person is Sotapanna.
But could a Sotapanna read the death penalty, do you think?
Why not? According to the law.
By the law.
Yeah. Oh, it's not his own. He is only the reading. The proclaiming or the announcing the result of such crime.
Okay, that's interesting. We get back to Ken's bombing one. Maybe it's a good thing. It's
if one says that to be killed is the result of one's own karma, is that wrong?
No, that's true. Ultimately, that is true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
it's all about one's intentions at the moment. You can make up all kinds of tricky stories or stories, but only you can know your intention, right? Nobody else can know your intention, really.
So, John, you tend to discourage theoretical speculation on such things as the question that Ken was asking initially about intention and
killing.
It's
endless.
Yeah, it is endless.
It is endless.
But even, say, the relationship between accumulations and Gamma Vibhaka. And there's clearly a connection because everything happens in citta, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of gamma arises in the citta and vibhaka is arising in citta, and accumulations are somehow, we don't know how it knits up, but everything that is real happens in citta. There's no world out there in which one's karma is waiting to catch up with you. It's all accumulated in
a moment, from moment to moment.
That's right.
The flame of the candle. See, when the flame goes out, where's the flame? And when the flame comes back, it comes from nowhere. So he was using that as an example of the conscious moment or the citta.
Alex had a question at breakfast about why is it bad to get angry, and if one doesn't get angry, doesn't that mean that other people will walk all over one or treat one badly? Like, and he gave an example of, if he doesn't show some annoyance with his friends, they'll start taking his food or his clothes or his belongings because they think, oh, he doesn't mind.
There are so many ways that the same thing can be accomplished. We just constrain ourselves to maybe the quickest, what appears to be the quickest or easiest.
May I ask Alex whether, if one has done something bad or wrong, what would that person like the other to do to me or the person who has done it? Suppose I did something wrong, what I would like the other to do to me?
To be friendly and point it out in a kind way rather than getting angry.
If you were that person. And that moment is kusala, wholesome. And wholesome does not harm anyone at all, yourself and the other. And that's the way to conquer a bad situation from unwholesomeness, akusala.
I think this is a good point, though. We would all like other people to be friendly or gentle with us. Yeah. No one likes someone else to get angry.
Yeah, so. It goes better, much better, too.
Can I have another question? It's about the attachment and stuff, but would you say to this Buddhism you're attached to that? Like, coming, you always come back to these Dharma discussions. Would that be attachment? Like, yeah.
We assume that there will be many moments of attachment, but we can also assume that why this and not maybe go to the beach? We see the value of this over that. So it's a mixture.
The idea is to accumulate wisdom. So we might have some attachment to coming to hear Dhamma, but hopefully from listening to it, we accumulate wisdom which overcomes attachments.
There's even issues with hopefully we'll accumulate wisdom.
Know.
Yes, but I know. But the wanting.
Wisdom could grow from just being here and hearing it.
And what about just wanting the answer?
Yeah, we want to know that. We want to ask that one secret question that John will finally tell us the answer.
Because you see that when there is attachment cling, it doesn't give up or give away anything at all. But when it's sadda or wholesome intention to understand, it's for becoming detached from what one gets used to attach to.
And I think in the end the answer is we can only all know for ourselves at any moment. We can't say, oh, everyone's here out of attachment, or because each moment is different. One moment of annoyance, one moment of boredom, one moment of attachment, one moment of seeing, one moment of hearing. So in the end we can only know for ourselves at any moment what the mental state is.
And if someone will say that, oh, it's kusala, but you know that it's not kusala.
you know, that the person is wrong.
We talk a lot about accumulating wisdom, and we've also talked that there's a lot more agusson in the day than kusala. So it would appear that there's more accumulating moha and lopa than there is wisdom. So how do you ever get rid of all this moha and dosa?
You can see that kusala wholesome moment is not very easy to arise at all. But now it has arisen. How come? Without any accumulation. Do not expect higher than this. That once kusala arises, that's enough. It shows that there must be accumulation for its arising.
How about this, I think from the commentary or something. Say there's a rope with many knots, right? And the knots are getting bigger and bigger. But someone with a big sword comes along and cuts through the whole thing. You don't have to untie all the knots, right? The sword cuts through everything. The sword of wisdom cuts it all.
That's why the sword.
The sword of Panya, right?
We can start with a few knots and then look for the sword.
Yeah, right.
At this moment.
Not sharp yet.
Oh. It's not sharp yet at all.
Yeah.
Not sharp enough.
No.
Right.
On that particular discussion I was listening to that I mentioned, you made a comment that if one hasn't heard and considered a lot, it's like trying to cut down a tree with a blunt knife, and that was why one needs to hear and consider a lot more detail.
Or pick up a mountain with your finger. Fingernail.
Ken, how about the question of dosa being conditioned by insight?
Oh, yes.
As long as there are conditions for dosa to arise.
I see. Yes. So if there are conditions for dosa to arise, then insight can sometimes be one of them.
It can be object, because you'd like to have more often or higher. At that moment, it's not pleasant at all to think that why not I have such and such again and again.
So the answer is yes?
Yes, but you had a particular scenario in mind.
Oh, a person has an insight that there is no self. Is it possible in subsequent thinking, because of that insight, he'll feel dismay and loneliness and perhaps fear?
Who doesn't have dosa at all?
And that's why you were mentioning courage earlier, John, right?
To
face the fact that really having the insight that there is no self with you, it's actually easier said than done, isn't it? Because all of our accumulated attachment to the notion of self in the world falls away. It can be a bit of a shock. Shock to your ignorance.
Yes. All right, yes. But the fact that the insight was accumulated perhaps means that that person is wise enough not to be shocked by the anatomous of existence.
What about ignorance? It's there as well, as latent tendencies.
Sarah, we were talking about this a bit at the restaurant the other day, and you mentioned some moment after insight where there can be almost a recoiling from it, and I think you gave it a name.
We were talking about the stage of insight, understanding the fearfulness of dharmas.
Yes.
Bhanga.
Right. Yeah.
Bhaya jnana. Understanding, appreciating how bad or fear they are. That's with kusala cittas, yes, that's with insight. Just because they're so impermanent and keep arising on, and basically understanding the fearfulness of continuing on in samsara. And at this stage is the beginning of turning away from conditioned dharmas, beginning of the turning towards the unconditioned dharmas. Seeing the harm and fearfulness and what is conditioned to arise, the visible object.
followed by so much attachment, on and on and on.
When it's panya, there's no fear at all.
No. So this is different from our kusala condition. Yes, okay. Yes, because I've heard Ajahn speak about courage before, and I'd often wondered what you meant.
Develop right understanding.
Mm-hmm. The courage to develop right understanding of reality.
Don't be discouraged.
And you were wondering about the good cheer part.
Yes, is that a term we find in the texts, or is it just one of our own terms when we say courage, patience, and good cheer? Is good cheer a dharma?
Yeah. Panya.
Panya. Mm. Oh, panya, good cheer.
Opposite of fear. Panya can see, can understand the very subtle truth of reality as it is, how there can be fear. There is piti and somanasa, pleasant feeling, is it?
Okay.
Can't get over such ignorance.
So actually we could say the good cheer refers to the piti and somanasa arising with the panya.
Yes.
To be precise. The happy feeling with the happy feeling and joy with panya.
The sovana jeta sika.
But when we say courage, patience and good cheer, we're more or less saying we're stuck with the way things are. Even if there's no understanding, we're stuck with the way we are. So let's just have courage, patience and good cheer.
Well, with understanding. Whatever it is, it's
reference
to understanding. Well, if it's not understanding, then it can't be courage. And it can't be good cheer. There's no reason for good cheer.
And there won't be patience.
There won't be patience.
No.
So actually they're pointing to panya.
You still understand, that's what's new. Yes, all right.
Just getting back to the example of the king or the judge who, as part of his job, has to have a role in people being sentenced to death. Because both Alex and Maeve made the comment, well, couldn't they resign their position, in effect, to avoid
depending
this implication?
On the right understanding of the individual.
Right. Could you elaborate on that a bit? And
well, because so the panna knows that there is no more killing, so it's not killing at all. Why one is the judge.
So you mean the sotapanna wouldn't resign?
He became like the king, Pimpisara, he's sotapanna.
But then I'm reminded of one of the lives of the Bodhisattva.
As Bodhisattva.
When he went to extreme lengths
not
to
yet
avoid
eradicate defilement.
He didn't want to be a king.
That's right. He went, as I say, he went to extreme lengths to avoid taking up.
But you mean if he was a sotapanna, he wouldn't have gone to those.
What about King Pimpisara?
Yes.
The judge passes down the sentence. There's then an executioner, presumably, in Sri Lanka. I don't know.
But what can he do? He has to read the law.
The judge has to.
By the law, not by him.
But the executioner himself, he must be doing akusala when he chops off the head, must he? Not the judge. One
yes,
step down, he
but
gives it.
What is the result of the crime? It depends on karma.
Yes.
Not he just want to make such judgment by himself.
No, he didn't want to. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When it's wrong, can you say it's right? When such action deserves such result, can you change? If you keep the law, if you are the one who reads the law.
But
it's not your own decision. It's according to what is said.
But the executioner could use that same thinking too, couldn't he?
If the crime hasn't been done, can there be any execution?
No.
So what brings the execution?
Well,
the deeds? The deeds or what? Or the law or what? In reality.
Why did he apply to become executioner?
You could say, why did he apply to become judge?
By accumulation.
Seems that there's confusion between like the laws that societies make and the law of karma.
No.
they're not different?
Can the law say that those who do wrong shall not get any result at all?
But sometimes there are, like, unjust laws that change over time. I suppose what I'm saying is that karmic law is absolute, whereas the law...
Whatever that person has to receive must depend on karma.
Yes.
So when she asked Robert what brings about the execution, the answer is karma.
Yes.
No matter the law change or not.
So, but I think I hear you saying about kind of obedience to the law, like the law of society.
If the law change, then what he read must be according to the law, but the law of karma must be there too.
Yes, the law. It seems that the law of karma overrides, like, any laws that people make.
That condition, the change of the law too.
Yeah, yes.
Or what is read according to what after the law has changed.
Oh, so are you saying that the laws that are in a society are part of karmic law?
When anyone does something wrong, can the law make it right? No punishment at all? Just do it, or what?
Well, sometimes there can be, mercy, an execution.
But that individual's karma again.
Yes.
No matter what the law is, changed or not.
So it's the individual's karma that's stronger than the laws that are made by society. That's more determining.
Person meeting his or her death at the hands of the executioner, that violent death is a result of karma, not a result of the law.
Not a result of the crime either.
Right. I was going to say not necessarily a result of the crime either. No. That the crime, the killing at some point will come back as we pop up, but we don't know when, where.
This is just the result of past karma that someone can see.
When we were in the States before we came here, we were involved in supporting the anti-war effort. And we would go to demonstrations and we would hold signs because, you know, we felt that, you know, decisions are made by the people in that country. And if you don't express that you're not happy with how those decisions are made, then you are basically saying you agree with it. And so as opposed to doing nothing, it's better to join the anti-war movement, encourage your friends to tell your congressmen and senators this is a bad idea to kill other people, as opposed to not doing anything and studying Dhamma. Is it bad to participate in a peace movement or to oppose the death penalty? Is that a bad thing to do?
Not at all.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily kusala either.
No, I'm not worried about it being kusala. I mean, there's plenty of moments in the day that are not kusala or akusala, but you're part of the system.
Is it bad not to participate?
Do you vote to?
Yes.
What did you say about a Hitler? He's a good guy.
What Hitler then? If he's a good guy, what Hitler? Not this one. Then he said Hitler is a good guy. It doesn't mean this one.
Yeah.
Which Hitler? Yeah.
Oh, actually, I meant, what about a person that does killing for a living, like, what would you say?
Working in an abattoir?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say about that?
It's killing wholesome. That's it. No matter who.
Ajahn, may I ask a question? It's in relation to the care of my mother. And she is, her health is not good, and she is often worried about many things. Now, I understand that, you know, the worry that arises is by accumulation. But I wonder, is there any advice that you can give that is useful when caring for someone who is elderly and not well? And
be metta, having metta.
At the same time, you talk about that often we don't know what is metta and what is not metta, that it has not developed.
Her, so you know what will please her.
What is appropriate. Yeah.
Yes.
Think what she'd like to hear, what she'd like to get. Mm. Instead of thinking of oneself, one can think of the other. With kindness.
Often it seems that when a person is worried or has accumulation to worry, that it is very hard to find the way to solve that worry or to lessen the worry. Because it's an accumulation, because it's quite strong. So maybe one thing is okay, and then there will be something else that is worried about. So
when there's right understanding will work its way. One doesn't have to worry about that at all. But if one plans to think like that or like this without understanding, who knows what would happen then? We can plan that we will be very good today, but when it grows. Happen. What happens is according to
conditions.
Yeah. So just understand reality, and it will bring more and more kusala reality.
When there's understanding, one has more of an appreciation of how to help or what mm-hmm. is suitable without actually thinking or planning.
Yes. Yes.
You think about the other's grief or the other's worry or the other's sickness, but it always comes back to the realities now, the seeing, the visible object, mm-hmm. the thinking about it, the hearing, the metta, the lack of metta. So can one say from this that understanding is the really compassionate way as well?
And actually it's only one's own thinking.
Yes.
Yes. Just getting back to Alex's question about Hitler, I'm wondering if you were suggesting that there was a similarity between his situation and, say, the judge.
And the others.
And the others.
Not only two.
Right. Do you see a distinction between...
Actually, I probably meant Hitman. Hitman. Like,
yeah.
You get asked to yeah. kill someone, and that's, like, and you get paid.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the
man who pays the hitman is like he's seeing the similarity between the judge and the government, maybe.
It depends on the person whether he will do that or not.
What about all these game computer games where people, there's thousands and thousands of these game parlors now in Thailand. And people spend hours upon hours killing people in a computer, you know, not, of course, not taking a life, but aiming and shooting and blood coming out and
attachment.
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 And no aversion? No aversion. Aversion, yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that they would attract people with right understanding and metta, would you?
Aversion, but not the level of killing.
Right.
Azita, do you go to the movies?
That's different to, yeah, but that's different to going to those game machines and actually doing it myself.
My name is.
I do.
And I go to the game machines.
Kitchen studio.
I just wonder about when I see so many young people in Thailand doing that, what the effect.
What about football?
Yes. Any game.
Yeah.
Any game, yeah.
The ones where they tackle.
Entertainment.
Punch.
How many of those people, kids who go to play, would you know, be interested in going out and actually killing? No one.
But different information as well.
Certainly in hockey or football, you know, where there's tackling and shoving into the boards and. I'm not a fan.
There's always loba and tosa, yeah, for sure, but exactly. It depends on what degree.
Mm-hmm. When you're playing football, you're kicking the ball and maybe you're tackling somebody, and then I know that killing on a computer screen is not taking a life, but...
Killing?
Yeah?
Not killing at all, it's just playing.
No, but the question is it... It looks like it's something easy. It makes killing look easy.
There's a lot
painless,
more,
no really.
There's probably more mana in it.
It makes it look more doable, more easy, more normal than we're used to. Like movies. Same.
Like violence on television. I mean, that's the big
thing. The same.
Same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People increase dosa and loba. Mm-hmm.
But Ajahn, didn't you like that movie?
Lord of the Rings.
Was it? Did you go and see Lord of the Rings? Yeah.
It's not true, so it's all right.
No, there's one you saw. Harry Potter.
It's not true, so it's all right.
It's all right. It's a story.
You saw the movie,
yeah,
but it's not true, so it's okay.
Yeah. It's not true.
Yeah.
I know that it's not true.
Yeah. Mm.
But when young children look at that movie,
yeah, they can be a
picture. They may think it's
do they know it's not true?
I think so.
No,
I mean,
witch.
A hitman goes, yeah, finds a new way of...
Because you hear about children who go to see Harry Potter and are afraid.
No, I think that...
It's a different level of a kusala.
Yeah.
I think the problem with movies is that often they encourage revenge.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
It's not the Jataka tales.
Keeps instilling in people's minds that revenge is okay.
Because
they've got the bad boy and the bad guy can be shot or killed. That's the thing I see mostly in movies that I find.
But don't you also hope that the baddie gets punished and you hope he dies painfully? I do.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to reflect on the fact that I see that this revenge thing going on. And I think that's a very bad concept to put into people's minds all the time. And you get these people who are on campuses in America or on the schools that have something go wrong with them, and then they feel they've got to have revenge and they go off killing people. You know, it's a problem.
No, but as Ken was saying, in real life we tend to side with the good people and point a finger at the bad people. That's a normal thing, right? Mm. Yeah. No meta.
Right.
But no meta for the good guys, for the bad guys?
No, but
when we watch a film, we have a kusala karma, don't we? Because we have. Oh, it's different from actually killing. Because the baddie doesn't get killed, but we sit there hoping he gets killed. So there is a lot of kusala going on.
I tend to look at it. I think about karma a lot, and I tend to think that things happen to people because of their karma, and someone is a vehicle for making that happen. But then that person has to have their karma come back. You know, they've got to have the vipaka from their action more.
But Ivan, you are not normal.
I know.
The more
actually, akusala is normal.
Akusala is normal. Dosa is normal. Not thinking
Moha.
Of karma or yes, it's just thinking, but it's different than your average
teenager or young person watching
a movie.
Yeah,
but the big problem in the world today is that there is this idea that you have to punish people and you have to have revenge, and that just keeps people in that samsara because they keep doing those things. It's a big problem in the world.
Well, they'll be in samsara anyway. I don't think
well, most likely they will be, without a doubt. But it seems like the movies are encouraging more and more of this than they used to. Maybe not. Maybe they're just as bad as they ever were.
Well, the latency is there.
The accumulations are there.
Yes, the accumulations are there. Yeah.
Wouldn't know
because
problem.
The social upbringing is still that way, isn't it? Yeah.
Before, when they gave the example of the people on the field who die from the bomb, and well, it's just the result of karma. But we can say there are other support conditions, can't we? So karma is the main condition, but the other, and Pakatu Panisya, the accumulation, Sahajata, what do they come under?
The bee?
The killer who bombed.
Without accumulation, can't anyone kill?
No. Back to what Sarah was just saying. You mentioned the people, you know, below the bomb, who were killed or whatever, and you mentioned...
What about the other places where they died too, not by the bomb?
Okay, well, anyone, you're right, anywhere, a death.
So the main cause of the death is...
Or
anytime,
anywhere, like now.
Okay, well,
Vipaka plays part in that.
Yes? Vipaka is a result of karma.
Yes.
So the death is a result of past karma.
That's right. But you mentioned the other
support condition
as well. How does that fit in?
Because there can't be any death without that natural decisive support condition we were talking about the other day. Paktu Pranisya Pachya also playing its role, so the accumulations of that person as well plays a role in when that karma will bring its result.
Okay.
Karma needs Pakatu Panisaya Pachaya in order to bring results.
Okay.
These two conditions have to be together, the karma condition and natural decisive support condition have to go together so that karma can bring its results.
This vipaka.
Yeah.
How does one's own accumulations have a bearing in the in a death?
In dying?
In, sort of vipaka.
Yes, but what is death? It's vipaka citta, the dying consciousness.
Yes.
You mean the last moment of this life?
Yes.
Which is the result, the end of that karma, which produced this personality.
Yes.
So, when it's ended, the next citta arises.
Yes.
That's all, like now. No
yes.
different.
And that I understood, but I'm not sure how once Sarah mentioned, made reference to one's own accumulations.
Keeps on going like now.
Mm.
Like nothing different at all.
Like even how one responds or reacts at each moment. So like when one's sick, how the accumulations are at each moment.
Okay. Do accumulations?
I think your question is how do they cause one's death, the accumulations?
Well, that...
How do they support the karma?
Support. Yes. Mm. Maybe. That's a bit... That would
difficult.
Be a good thing to hear about.
There's not... Just only one condition for anything to arise. It depends on how much we can understand about accumulation of conditions. What's the difference between Pavanga and Jutti Citta?
They are all the same type in one life. So Jutti Citta is the same type as Pavanga Citta and the first Citta of that life. All the same type.
It's just the name for the last citta.
Yeah.
So the last citta or the last citta of the life?
Yeah. With the same object. Same object,
So it's like saying, how does Bhavanga citta arise now by as a result of past karma and accumulation.
Yeah, different function.
Mm-hmm. And with Vipakajita, okay, you were saying it arises from a number of, most predominantly the gamma condition, but the support conditions as well. So when we were talking earlier about the accumulations that arise and fall away with each jitta, would also arise and fall away with the vipaka jitta.
Each jitta.
So vipaka as well as. I think I need to read
no
about conditions.
To get out.
But usually when we refer to accumulations, we're particularly referring to the jhavana cittas, I thought.
Yes, as different character.
Characteristics,
different,
okay, yeah. In that sense, like how much lobha, how much dosa, but actually there is an accumulation to each moment. Okay, so two senses of accumulation.
Is there any accumulation at this moment of seeing, or none at all? Is there accumulation?
Not
at the moment of seeing now,
of
to whatever has been accumulated, where would they go
of
away?
The past.
All the accumulations of the past.
It's
go
in
on.
Each jitta.
It's in each jitta.
Yeah.
Each jitta.
It's latent in each jitta.
So when we talk about the support for bringing about the moments of vipaka jitta, we're just referring to all and any accumulations there by Pakatupanissya, which gives an idea of just how broad it is.
Do you mind about vipaka, which hears now? So you mind about some vipaka, which is not hearing?
I beg your pardon?
You mind about some vipaka, not all vipakas?
Well, I guess I... There's attached, there's like and dislike.
After vipaka.
Yes. I suppose if there's a horrible, horrible noise, I do mind about it, a lot of dislike.
So then we accumulate new tendencies. But when I see...
So next life is different from this life by accumulation of this life as well. Mm.
Are you suggesting we worry about death, vipaka, but not about the experiences through the sense doors, vipaka?
What about hearing and seeing dies away all the time? Exactly the same, like other jittas. You'll be born the new one, good or not.
We keep getting reborn, so we don't have so much concern about
expect
that.
For the better? Not for the worse life.
Who had the question about instinct? Was that
Tom's question? Instinct and intuition.
Instinct. Yeah. What is instinct? what we call instinct, which is
conditioned. By accumulation.
And subconscious?
What is it again? Subconscious. You mean bhavanka or what?
The difference between subconscious and instinct? Nothing, no different. Just a different name for...
Sort of like dreaming.
What moment is subconscious? Moment?
Just ordinary moment. But
seeing, you mean?
Not seeing.
Thinking.
Moments of thinking.
Thinking is thinking.
Yeah.
Do you say that it's subconscious?
Well, just in conventional language.
Thinking that there's no awareness or...
So you classify thinking by being subconscious or...
Not strictly classifying, but...
Is it real?
Yes, it's real.
So it's thinking?
Yeah, it's thinking.
Not subconscious.
Well, in conventional language, we use subconscious...
At this moment, where is the subconscious moment?
No.
No,
it's
so...
Thinking.
So think...
A classic example is you drive home, or you drive, you know, some distance, and you realize that you actually don't remember the last 20 miles. You know, you saw a sign. And, but
it's just thinking, it's not subconscious.
You know when you're paying attention, but when you're not paying attention.
And subconscious or not subconscious?
Not.
Not what?
Not subconscious.
Not subconscious.
That's as opposed to because we're paying attention.
To what?
To you.
There could be subconscious thinking. No, one could be thinking about lunch, for example, even when you're paying attention to what is being said.
Can we say that subconscious is akusala?
Well, most thinking is akusala, so most thinking is akusala.
I mean, so subconscious, is it akusala? Yeah. Can it be kusala? There must be sati with kusala moment.
Mm-hmm.
So can it be kusala subconscious?
I think sati can arise. Presumably there can be kusala moments that we are not necessarily aware of.
But at moment of sati, it's different from moment of akusala.
Yes.
When there is kusala, there must be ignorance.
Right.
But when there are wholesome jetasikas at that moment, it's not...
No ignorance.
No ignorance.
Correct.
Jan, Vivanga Chaita, what is the characteristic of Vivanga Chaita?
Nothing appears.
Nothing appears. Is the...
Because there is no seeing, no hearing, no smelling, no tasting, no touching, no thinking. So what would appear?
Is the Vivanga Chaita from being to being different?
Are chittas different from being to being?
Yes, but that's as a result we've been talking about the accumulations and the sort of through sense doorways and the mind door. So if there is nothing appears, what makes it different from being to being? What is the difference?
Accumulation.
Could you give an example of the difference?
While one get up, wake up, is there any different from being to baby to being? Everyone gets up in the morning.
Well, then that means it's the same.
You mean same thinking?
The one gets cheated from being to being. No. So what makes it different from
not experience anything, suddenly you wake up, there's seeing, there's hearing, there's hardness, different accumulations react
yes,
to those
that's
differently.
Okay. That part's okay, but it's that the Bhavangacitta, is that different from that sustains life from...
Every chitta is accumulated, and the accumulations pass on from one chitta to another, so the accumulations are in every chitta. Are conditioned in every chitta.
I suppose what I'm getting at is that we can talk quite specifically about the difference between all the different chittas and jetasikas. And I'm trying to ask whether we can speak that specifically about the Vivanga.
What's your patisanthicitta and kundinas patisanthicitta? Were they the same?
That's the question. Actually,
to be born as human being must be the result of wholesome deeds. So it has to be the vipaka of sensuous kusala. But the accumulation are different. Yours are yours and kuninas are kuninas.
And is that they are different at the level of Bhavanga Chitta also?
What about the Bhavanga Chitta of Sammasambuddho and his Savaka? The same or different?
I don't know.
So Savaka is like Buddha?
No. But why? But why?
It's an accumulation.
So the
different degrees of understanding.
I suppose you could ask, is the moment of seeing and hearing the same for different people too.
But, I mean, that thing about different degrees of understanding, but at the moment of the Patisandhi, the Bhavanga Citta, the Vipaka Citta, can we refer to different degrees of understanding also? I suppose we must. Different degrees of sati, different degrees of understanding.
We can have similarities, Bhavanga is result. In each case, it's same. We can have similarities in a human being, two roots each or three roots same.
And degrees of the qualities.
That's about as far as it goes. And the rest is accumulations, which is difference even now, different personalities,
yes.
Different
yes.
Tendencies. So that's different. And that is accumulated in each Bhavanga.
There can be awareness of Bhavanga. Is there any moment between seeing and hearing?
Yes, because in terms of the process of citta, there's Bhavanga in there.
And after seeing has passing away, and before hearing arise, you know what's there. Even you don't name or call it Bhavanga. Like now, there must be Bhavanga in between, the process of seeing and hearing. But it's not like when Panya can see it or penetrate the true nature of different ones.
But when insight has been attained, only then there can be awareness of Bhavanga Citta. We asked this before. And I found it difficult.
Only when insight has been developed.
Yeah. Right. But we cannot imagine.
Yes. I find it very hard to imagine.
Yes. Probably only after the arising and falling away of cheetahs has been known.
Yeah.
But when one can experience or penetrate the distinction between two realities, it means that there must be what in between.
Bhavanga in between.
And it appears that it's
appears.
Not this or that.
Yes. It has a characteristic.
It's that which knows, but the object is not appear.
So that's why I said there would have to have been the understanding of the rising and falling away of two cheetahs.
Or when one citta appear.
Yeah. And falls
and
away.
The other and appear, and the other appear. The first jhana.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes.
After the first vipassana jhana.
Even the first vipassana jhana. Why are there at two different moments, different objects?
So would that be direct understanding of Bhavanga cheetahs or just
no naming at all, but
just
it's there,
knowing that
which
those cheetahs.
It's not seeing or hearing.
Okay.